Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns rebounded admirably with a 27-3 win Sunday over the Tennessee Titans. They moved past the ugly loss of the Steelers, put aside the loss of Nick Chubb, and played a great game. Speaking of rebounds, quarterback Deshaun Watson played his best game as a member of the Browns. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Scott, that was an amazing victory by the Browns. We both predicted them to win, but I don't think we saw that domination. I mean, I haven't gone back and looked at every game since 99. Clearly, I don't have the time for that. But knowing I've watched everyone since 99, that's definitely got to be top 3 to 5. It's up there as one of the most dominating wins they've had since they've been back.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, I don't have that list in front of me either, but there's not a lot of them, right? And it starts with giving up only 3 points. When you do that, you get a chance to dominate games. I mean, you go to week one, right? They won 24-3 against the Bengals. Felt like there were more extenuating circumstances to that game. The weather, Burrow coming off, you know, not playing in the preseason, having the calf injury. It just felt a little bit different. But again, that was a dominant performance, but this was from start to finish. Like, the Titans never got anything going. You know, in that Bengals game, the Browns struggled early offensively, so it took a while for the score to get to double digits. But yeah, it was special teams, right? The kicker makes a couple of long kicks. It's Dustin Hopkins. It's offense. Deshaun Watson plays really well. And then the defense continues to play at a level that's the best in the league. And, you know, I'm sure you saw some of the stats out there, Chud, and I wrote about it yesterday. Yeah. But first in the league in rushing, first in the league in passing, fewest yards through 3 games in franchise history. I think the next best one was 1957 that they surpassed. And then third since 1970. Third since 1970.
1970.
Yeah, in the
491.
League. Yeah, 491 yards through 3 games. You know, they've given up 21 first downs in 3 games, which is miles ahead of anybody else. And the Chargers are last in the league, and they've given up 81. That's 20 more first downs a game. That's incomprehensible to me. So
yeah, how about only giving up 94 yards? And I know you saw it, the video. Was it Teller's reaction when Stefanski said that in the locker room?
Yeah, that was my lead to my story today. It's just because it was such a – I couldn't – like, it was a are you serious kind of look, right? Like, that can't be true. And it was, and I asked Teller about it, and Teller said, yeah, that was a genuine reaction. So, I mean, 94 yards. Derrick Henry runs for 20, right? They gave him 26 rushing yards, and Henry, I think, carried 11 times for 20 yards. So, you know, when the defense is playing like this, and we talked about it, but every week it just feels more real. Right? You can play well for a week, you can play well for 2 weeks. The longer the defense does this, it feels more legitimate. And then it feels more realistic to think that this team will be in every game. That, you know, if the defense gives up 13 points, well, it's not that hard to score 14 points, right? Like, so you can start to imagine the Browns being in a bunch of games and winning a bunch of games, which, you know, and I might write something about this today. I'm trying to figure out how I want to go with an analysis. But the roller coaster in this league is unsurpassed by anything else. And we saw it, right, in 6 days. Monday, they lose. Tuesday, everybody is so down. And when I say everybody, fans, talk radio, right? Like, the world's ending. And I forget, one of the Browns said it, the sky's falling. I forget, maybe it was Alex Van Pelt. He's like, the sky's not falling. But that's how it feels. And all of a sudden, 6 days later, they play really well and you have a different thought pattern, right? Like, after the opener, it was, oh man, they can go to the Super Bowl. After the Steelers game, it's everybody's going to get fired. Now it's, hey, maybe they can go to the Super Bowl again. And that's not a healthy way to live, I don't think. And I don't think it's a healthy way to watch the NFL because there's so many ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys. But it just amazes me, and especially early in the season, right, when you're not, you know, if you get to October, November, you lose a game, whatever, there's, you know, you have this catalog of games. But early in the season, it's crazy.
Well, you know, I said it on the pod with you last week, and, you know, I felt like I needed to say this on the air on Go last Tuesday morning because I didn't want to get too high after the Bengals game. But then, in fairness, I didn't want to get too low because, remember, Scott, last week on the pod, we both agreed that you can still win without Nick Chubb. We don't need to reset that. We both said it. Obviously, a huge loss. But I just felt like on Tuesday morning telling everyone on the air, listen, as bad as it is, this team has a chance to be 3-1. You can win the next two games. They always lose in Pittsburgh. Let's try to put this behind us and look forward. This is a good team right now, and they still need to prove to me some things. But I'm really happy that they came out and they did what they did against Tennessee. Whether they were riding the adrenaline of playing for Chubb or their defense is just that great, whatever it is, the bottom line is, you know, you're right. It's a roller coaster, and you can't get too high and you can't get too low, correct?
Yeah, for sure. And maybe this is, I'm saying something that just should go without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think the Browns are at a point where it's going to come down to how they play on a given game, right? On a given Sunday, given Monday, right? And it's not, they're so outclassed talent-wise, their quarterback's so bad that they don't belong. It's going to come down to, do they turn the ball over, right? Do they get key stops on third down like they have been? Does Watson play well, right? Like, I mean, all those things are, you know, somewhat obvious, but it's not a point where they're going to go into a game, I don't think, and be outclassed from a talent perspective. And maybe we felt that way in years past, but it didn't always show up like that, right? They go in and they get blown out. I mean, they got blown out coming out of the bye last year against Miami. And this isn't to say they'll never get blown out again. But my point is, I feel like with the way the coaching is, you add Jim Schwartz, you get better on special teams, that it just feels like it's going to come down to how they play in a given week, how the matchups work, right? A couple plays here and there. And that feels like a different spot than they've been through a lot of the time since they've come back. But even the last couple of years when, you know, they had the issues with Baker in 21. You had the whole Deshaun Watson stuff last year, right? The defense really underachieved last year, which led to the losses and the blowouts and those kind of things. So I feel like they've turned a corner in that respect. And it's going to come down to, okay, what happens on this game at these plays? And I do feel like that's a step forward, if that makes sense.
The worst part of the Browns defense is the Browns offense. Turnovers.
Right. Right. I mean, and if you look at it, right, I mean, the two touchdowns against Pittsburgh were defensive scores, right? There's nothing you can do about that. The field goal that the Titans got was after Elijah Moore fumble, and on that possession, the Titans lost 9 yards. So you can take, and I think maybe one of those touchdowns, they didn't kick an extra point. So let's call it 16 points. They're only giving up 32. You can take 16 points off the board, and they're still leading the league at 32. So again, that's remarkable. And I think another, you know, as well as the defense has played, there's another level. And that comes from creating a bunch of turnovers. And they only had the two takeaways. And those are both in the first quarter of that Steelers game. So you would think when the defense is playing as well as it is, that more turnovers would come, more takeaways would happen. And I expect that too. And they talk about them coming in bunches. So I think there's going to be a stretch in this season where the Browns get a bunch of takeaways. Having said that, one of them keeping them from getting more takeaways is when you're only on the field for three plays at a time, it's kind of hard to get a takeaway, right? Like, I think they're averaging 50 plays a game, which is way below, I think the offense is averaging 87. So, you know, there's less opportunities. But I do think we could see a game where the Browns get a defensive touchdown or two by themselves, where they get strip sacks, and it's just one of those, as dominant as they've been, I do think they can reach another level if they start to get the takeaways.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. Are we at a point where we can call them elite or a championship defense yet? I mean, it has only been three games.
I need more time, Chud. Certainly the way they played through three games is at that kind of a level. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I need to see more. You know, they haven't faced an elite quarterback yet, and I say that because Joe Burrow wasn't himself week one. Let's see when that happens. Let's see when they match up against San Francisco. Not that Brock Purdy's elite, but that's an elite offense. You know, when they play Burrow again in January, right? I mean, they play Lamar Jackson on Sunday. He's an elite quarterback. How does that go, right? So I think there's still questions out there, but I feel really good about where this defense is going to continue to be, you know, assuming they don't sustain any major injuries or enough major injuries. And the reason for this is they have one of the best pass rushers in the league. He's surrounded by other quality up front, which, and I'm talking about Myles Garrett, obviously, but they have Za'Darius Smith, Obo Okoronkwo, Alex Wright has shown up more than he did as a rookie. Dalvin Tomlinson in the middle is making a difference in the run game, which was obvious against Derrick Henry, Maurice Hurst, Jordan Elliott. And then in the back end, they got three corners that you can trust to play man-to-man and three safeties that they like, including Grant Delpit, who's playing at a really high level, the best I've seen him play since he's been with the Browns. So I think when you put all that together and you got a coordinator who is experienced and proven and a winner and has changed the attitude on that defense, I think that makes you confident moving forward that this is not just a 3-week thing.
Yeah, and they have been elite through three games, no question. I heard someone call them a championship defense, and while I think that's possible and they could be that, I think it's too early to tell fans that that's exactly the case at this point. Not saying it can't happen. I agree. I'm kind of glad you said what you said. Let's let it play out a little bit longer. But definitely the signs are there, no question. And Myles Garrett, I almost feel bad that I somewhat questioned him last week. And I don't know if I don't know if it was that I questioned him. I think I phrased it as some people in social media were, because it seems like whenever they lose, you get that, you know, hey, he needs to make a big play type thing. So I was addressing that situation. And, you know, I guess that does seem to be the case. And you totally backed him up and said, this guy plays hard every play, or at least 98% of the play. So I'm going to give you props because you have stood behind that guy no matter what, whether it showed up or not. And, you know, I give you credit for that. But, man, what did he have, 3.5 sacks? I mean, what he's doing right now is, I mean, it's definitely fun to watch.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, Chud, because I was going to talk about that. I don't want to beat a dead horse and repeat myself too much, but I don't understand the criticism he gets when I think he plays at a high level every week. You can't have 3.5 sacks every game. It just doesn't happen. He got double teamed a bunch against the Steelers. They used a guard and a tackle. It's tough to beat a guard and a tackle. When they tried to block him one-on-one, he won. And the Titans made the mistake, and maybe that's because they only see him once every couple of years, and it's not twice a year like the division, that they tried to block him one-on-one, and Andre Dillard had no chance. And Garrett, you know, wrecked the game. And I just think that he plays with a lot of effort all the time. I think he plays at a high level nearly all the time. And I think he is scrutinized way too much by segments of this fan base and segments of this media. And I don't understand that. I don't agree with it. And I think that game against the Titans just proved that. And we can't do this podcast without me bringing up those two tight ends moving from side to side. Right? Like, I've never seen it before. Nobody had ever seen it before. It's ridiculous that they would try to do that. I mean, I understand why they would try to do that. And then Miles to kind of think on his feet that, well, I'm going to go the other side and see what happens here. Now, you know, if a team tried to do that, there's probably a way they could take advantage for a play, right? Like, they catch Miles on the other side and they run in the other direction, right? But on third long or whatever, Miles is playing with those guys. And it's such a sign of respect. The Steelers did that once with one tight end, and that was unusual. For the Titans to try to do it with two guys, I think is unprecedented and hysterical.
Yeah, we saw him doing the dribbling in week one, and you're right. I think just with the naked eye, anyone who isn't even like a football expert or someone who knows the game really well, you could just tell Tennessee's offense was so uncomfortable. They just did not at any point ever look like they could get into rhythm. The Browns were in the backfield all the time. Even at the end of the half, I mean, how do you let that happen where you get sacked and don't even get a field goal? I mean, it just they were completely taken out of the game.
They were, and you know, Mike Vrabel's a great coach, and this is a little shot at some of the other beat writers. Like, he gets so much love, and I think he's a good coach. I don't know if he's a top five coach in this league, and we saw him come in here and embarrass Freddie Kitchens in 2019, right? And it was a Mike Vrabel win, and he was outclassed Freddie Kitchens. So I'm not trying to take too much away from Mike Vrabel, but I thought there were a couple of big coaching errors in that game. And maybe it's not coaching. Maybe it's just execution. It's not the coach's fault. But on that play, right, the ball's got to come out, and that's partly on Tannehill. But they had the running back, and maybe the running back screwed up. But on that play where you're talking about the sack at the end of the first half, where 3 points matter, right? It's like a 10-3 point. It's, I don't know if the score is 10-3 or 13-3 at the time. It's still a close game. The Titans are getting the ball to start the second half. They're trying to double dip. And the running back releases and runs right by Myles Garrett without chipping it. And next thing you know, Garrett is into Andre Dillard. He's got him, you know, he's still trying to block him, but it doesn't matter because he's dipping and ripping and going through to get to Tannehill, where they should have chipped there. And it cost him 3 points. And I don't know if that's a Vrabel thing. I don't know if it's a coordinator thing. I don't know if the running back just screwed up. But I guess the point is Mike Vrabel was not able to have a big enough impact where he swung this game. And I know there are people thought he might, and I'm not saying he never has that impact, but I thought Kevin Stefanski called a really good game, and I thought Jim Schwartz called a great game. And, you know, when you have the talent around you that's making plays, your quarterback plays better, your defense plays better, your corners are better, because that was a big difference between the Browns and the Titans, is the Browns' corners were way better than the Titans' corners, then maybe it doesn't matter who the head coach is because all that other stuff supersedes it.
How about this? I do want to say something. No, I will say I'm going to contradict myself because I do go on a roller coaster ride when it comes to Stefanski. One week, I'm thinking maybe this guy isn't the right guy. And then the next week, I'm like, yeah, he's the right guy. Like, I do that with him. But I mean, did you see this note? He's 7-0 against the AFC South.
Yeah. How about that? Which, you know, feels a little fluky, you know, not fluky, but like, I mean, it's good, obviously, right? You want to be 7-0. You just wonder, like, you know, it's not inside the division. It's outside the division. That's not historically or recently hasn't been a great division. But it means he's beaten Mike Vrabel a couple of times. Vrabel, like we talked about, is considered a really good coach, and I agree that he's a really good coach. I remember when they went down in the playoff year, 2020, and came out and bombs away and hit a bunch of deep passes and hung on to win. They had a really good game plan in that game to beat Tennessee. And I thought they had a really good game plan this week because Tennessee's strength on defense is that front. And, you know, it looked kind of like trickery early in the game. The Browns were running sweeps and they ran a, you know, like a flea flicker throwback kind of thing, a reverse pass, throwback screen. They were doing a bunch of stuff and it's part of the script. So they practiced it and that was what they wanted to do. And Stefanski said it wasn't about tricking the Titans. It was about making them play wide and stretching that defense out because if you let those big guys up front, Autry and Simmons, that if you let those guys kind of dominate in the middle, it gets tight, it gets congested, it's tough because they're so big and strong. But if you start getting that defense moving wider, you have more areas to attack. And I think that was a solid plan from Stefanski, and it played off because we saw the offensive success, especially throwing the ball, as the game went on.
I liked watching in the locker room when he was giving out the game balls. That was pretty cool. And it seems like I'm going to kind of ask you, or I'm going to mention three things and kind of just tie them together before we move on to Deshaun Watson. But they're going with the resilient bunch, you know, that's the resilient, that's the word they're using. How do you feel about that word, resilient? Do you feel like they're doing this for Nick Chubb now the rest of the year? And do you feel like that training camp bonding going, leaving Berea is paying off already early in the year? Kind of like three things, but all very tied into one.
Yeah. Let's go back to front. It's so hard to quantify if the Greenbrier made a difference, right? But I'm going to say yes, because I've heard enough guys reference it since they've been back, right? Like, oh yeah, we did, we had this bonding and we grew closer. Like, and I feel that did have an impact. Again, I feel like that can be fragile, right? You lose a couple games, stuff starts to go wrong. Everybody forgets about Greenbrier. But I feel right now that it did have the desired effect. Juan Thornhill talks about why they're so good on third down. He says, because we meet every week to talk about how we're going to be good on third down. And that feels like an element that either was missing last year or just not up to this level. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, resiliency was the third one. Oh, Chubb. Yes, I think they are dedicating it to Chubb. I know they are. Multiple guys have said it multiple times. And obviously it's fresh in their minds, but I think Chubb's presence is so deep in this team that it's not going to go away if he's gone for a couple of weeks having surgery. Or, you know what I mean? Like, just I think his presence will stay even if he's not an everyday presence in the locker room, in the building. Certainly on the field, he won't be. I do feel like that will linger because it's Nick Chubb, where some other guys, you know, they would kind of drift out of consciousness, so to say. I don't think that's going to happen for Nick Chubb. I thought it was cool that Stefanski gave him a game ball and then, you know, drove it to him and delivered it. Because, you know, it feels like you're we're just saying this over and over, but Chubb means that much to this team, right? And I think this is all just driving that home, that point home. We knew what he meant when he was here, and this is just kind of making everybody realize that even in his absence, he still means so much, which I think is important. I think it's good. I think that's the type of player and person Nick Chubb is. And then resilient, that's how you have to be in this league, Chubb. And Kevin Stefanski would tell you that. I would tell you that. We talk about the roller coasters. You have to be able to bounce back when stuff goes wrong. And yes, you're trying to keep like a more of an even keel things, certainly as a coach, also as a player. But part of that is when you have those dips, you figure out a way to get back to that level. And they're going to need to be resilient all year. Part of that's not having Chubb. Part of that's the nature of life in the NFL. But I think this was a huge step in that direction. And if you remember in 2020, Chubb, they didn't lose two games in a row all year.
And that's right.
And that's how they got to the playoffs. Because you win a couple in a row, you only lose one, right? Like, you're going to have a winning record that way. And if they can do that again, obviously that'll be huge as they try to make this playoff push.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to Deshaun Watson, but that's how dominating the defense was and the storylines that we had to talk about, which is a good thing. But needless to say, it's time to get to him because the other big story is Deshaun Watson. And as you mentioned earlier, I think you said at the very top, it's the best we've seen him in a Browns uniform, right? I mean, that's the closest we've seen to what we hope we can get out of him.
I think so. Now, I think there's even more room to grow from there.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think the only other half to compare is when he threw three second half touchdowns. I think it was against the Commanders last year on New Year's Day. That was, to me, his previous best game with the Browns, best stretch with the Browns. And it didn't compare to this. You know, 82% completion rate. We talked last week about, to me, that was one of the biggest concerns, is that he was not throwing as accurately as he had throughout his tenure in Houston. The completion percentage numbers had dipped so significantly from close to 70% down to 55%. And for him to go to 82%, I think is really meaningful. And they weren't all easy throws. Yes, Kevin Stefanski found a way to get him some easy throws, right? They run some hitches, some bubble screens, you know, some hooks over the middle. And I think those are important. And I think it's important that Watson takes those, doesn't hold the ball forever, gets it out of his hands, gets some easy completions, because I think that helps the offense get a rhythm. It helps him get a rhythm, builds his confidence. But he also made some throws down the sideline. The Amari Cooper play where the official ruled him out of bounds incorrectly, that was a really good throw by Watson. There's a play in the second half, similar play, kind of that deep fade. He dropped it in a bucket to Donovan Peoples-Jones. It was a great throw. And we saw signs, a couple signs of that in Pittsburgh when he made sideline throws in the fourth quarter. He had one that Elijah Moore did not get a second foot down that I thought was a really good throw, and Moore should have gotten the foot down in Pittsburgh. So you're seeing, I think you're seeing more and more examples, but he ties in the great throws with a series of efficiency throws against the Titans, and those had been missing, which is why the completion percentage had been so low. So to me, that was a huge improvement for Watson. He made a, you know, he made the really dumb lateral that cost him 16 yards. It winds up getting erased by one of those pass interference calls, and they go out down and score a touchdown. But he made fewer dumb plays. I thought his decision-making was better. Stefanski raves about how he saw the field, the decision-making. And that's all, it's all combined, right? And it all plays into the accuracy. If you're seeing the field like you're supposed to, like you want to, and you're making clear decisions, then that helps your accuracy, right? You're throwing on time. You're throwing to open guys. You're taking the easier completions. And it felt like that all came together for Watson on Sunday. Now, you know, a couple of disclaimers. The Titans' pass defense is not very good. They had matchups they loved in one-on-one. They didn't think the Titans could guard Amari Cooper, and they couldn't. And they were able to take advantage of that. So you need to see Watson continue this, right? It's got to be a consistency. He's got to do it against the Ravens. He's got to do it against the 49ers coming out of the bye, right? That's a really tough matchup. He's got to string these performances. But when it felt like coming out of Pittsburgh that it was a serious time to worry about if Watson would ever figure it out, right? And I know those discussions are had. We talked about it, and it had been 8 games. It had been 2 games this year, and he hadn't shown that improvement that everyone was hoping for, all the fans were hoping for and expecting. For him to do that against Tennessee was such a positive, and at least it puts a pause on, okay, Deshaun Watson's broken, because he certainly didn't look broken on Sunday.
No, it puts a pause on it, but it's still, you're not ready to go one direction or the other. It's still a wait and see, right?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I just, you know, Chud, I don't like to jump ahead, right? And it's one game. And there were plenty of positives and not many negatives. There weren't. I thought early in the game he held on to the ball a little long, and I thought it got better as the game went on. So I think this is a stepping stone, a building block. But I'm not ready to say Deshaun Watson's back, right? Like, I just think you need to see more. And if he plays poorly Sunday, I'm not ready to say he's broken again, right? Like, there's going to be ebbs and flows to everything, like we talked about. And I think there's going to be ebbs and flows to Watson's progression. But that performance made me think that there's a chance that he's going to figure this out, right? And that there's a better chance that when we get to week 10, you say, okay, Watson is no longer a huge concern, when he certainly was a huge concern, you know, weeks 1 and 2.
It'll be interesting to see how he does moving forward without Nick Chubb. So, you know, it's a little bit different. Maybe he'll excel without Chubb. I know that sounds crazy, but sometimes that happens in sports. So I know that that's kind of a bold comment, and I don't really want to dive into that, but let's just see how it goes here as the weeks go on. But basically that's leading into my next point. What'd you think of Ford? I mean, he scores 2 touchdowns, but, you know, it's not like he was amazing running the ball.
No, he wasn't. I don't – to me – and I wanted to ask Stefanski about this yesterday on Zooms, and I didn't get a chance. I think we're going to have to wait to see how this run game plays out without Nick Chubb, because that Titans defense is good. That Titans defense, the run defense, is really good. We talked about their front.
Yeah, good point.
You know, they entered the league tied with the Browns third in rushing defense. I think they're on like a historic 18-game stretch yards per game. They haven't given up 100 yards rushing in a long time. So I think we need to see them against other defenses. Now, Baltimore historically has a good run defense. I don't think it's the same as it's been. The Colts look like they ran pretty well on them last week. So I think we need to let it play out a little bit more. get through the bye week, get past San Francisco, and see how this run defense, or I'm sorry, see how this run offense develops with Ford, with Kareem Hunt. But, you know, I didn't, it's not like I saw stuff out of Jerome Ford where I go, oh, he can't do it. I just think that's a tough assignment. And, you know, he had a good 3-yard touchdown run. He was able to turn the corner when they gave it to him inside the five. And I thought it was a good play call when the Browns went empty, split him out wide. They got him matched up against a linebacker, and he ran a slant and go, the sluggo, and he left the guy in the dust. And, you know, Watson found him and made an easy throw for the 19-yard touchdown. You know, the Browns like to do that. And I even with Hunt, right? Like Chubb, they would use Chubb like that, but Chubb wouldn't really run the deep routes. Hunt runs those a little bit, but Hunt's not nearly as fast as Ford. Ford's a former receiver. He's got excellent speed. Like, I think that's a layer to the game that they can develop, is when they go empty, if they get him matched up on a linebacker, they can take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. So we don't need to break it down, because everybody knows that has to be one of the worst calls ever made in NFL history, right? That the Cooper catch, calling him out of bounds. I mean, that was brutal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's such a bad call. And, you know, Cooper didn't understand it. He said it wasn't close. And he said, so he thought, in the official's opinion, for the official to think it was close enough to blow the whistle, that he should have erred and just let the play continue, right? Because he knew he wasn't obviously out of bounds, because he was obviously inbounds. So he just didn't understand how he could miss it. You know, guys, people are, they're human, right? And the guy missed the call. It's a good thing for the Browns that it did not wind up costing them the game. Cooper cost him a touchdown. It was funny. He said the safety was cooked, because there was a safety back there. Hooker was back there. And Cooper said he was cooked. I was going to make a move that he wasn't going to be able to stop me. But then luckily for Cooper, he gets the touchdown late in the game.
Because
he felt like he should have had that one. And then there's another one where they didn't call a flag. He stopped running and he would have been wide open. And he thought there was a touchdown. So he's glad he got that 43-yarder at the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can say that he's human and everyone makes mistakes or whatever, but I mean, that's like his main job. That's like, Scott, what if this podcast, I just didn't ask you any questions? I just went silent every time it was time to ask you something. I mean,
I couldn't come up for words, which happens from time to time. No, I get it. It's a terrible call. I get it. You know, in my old age, Chud, I've gotten way softer on the officiating. I used to be much rougher on them. But yeah, it's a bad call. And you know, if you're a fan, if you're the Browns, you're just grateful that it didn't cost them, right? Like it wound up not being a big play in the game.
Cooper was great though. And the three penalties drawn.
Four.
I mean, four?
I think Stefanski got that wrong in his postgame, because I counted it up and I had four. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Two holds and two pass interferences. Chud, it was like 70 yards of loss or 70 extra yards, right, that you don't see show up in his stats.
Pivotal times, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're all first downs, right? There's four first downs because they could not guard Cooper. And real quick, you know, we talked so much about Elijah Moore heading into the season, and I get it. The Browns added him for reasons. They thought he was going to add a bunch to this offense, and he still can. He had 9 catches Sunday. But I think we overlooked Amari Cooper. He's the number one receiver on this team. He is clearly the best receiver on this team, and he has kind of reaffirmed that through 3 weeks.
Well, I don't think did anyone ever say that he wasn't. I think we just said in the future, because there's questions about how long he'll be around, right? I mean,
well, correct, but there's a sense that, okay, well, they're getting ready for Elijah Moore in 2024 to be the guy. I have not seen anything from both those guys to make me think Elijah Moore can replace Amari Cooper as the number one. And that's
you're right.
It's not necessarily a knock on him. More, it's more of Cooper's really good.
Yeah. Moore hasn't shown yet what we hope to see out of him. And I'm glad you brought him up, because that was going to be next. And since you mentioned that, I'm ready to move on to the Ravens and start looking at them, unless you have anything else on the game or anything from this week.
No, just real quick, I'm more like, I think they're still trying to figure out the best way to use him, right? And the best ways to use him. And I think 9 catches, that's obviously, he had an impact Sunday. it just hasn't been those big plays. And I think they're still trying to figure out a way to kind of break him loose. And it's not easy when he's not the biggest guy in the world, right? So it's hard to throw the ball to him downfield. I mentioned that one against the Steelers. He didn't come up with down the sideline. Amari Cooper says that's what he loves about Moore is he plays bigger. So maybe that is a way. Maybe they can find him on those deep crosses, something to get him some explosive plays, get him out in space where he can make up a guy miss and go. We just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, no, we're not giving up on him. That's for sure. All right, you ready to – so you got Lamar, Mark Andrews, the Ravens coming to town, Jadeveon Clowney coming back. Man, I'll tell you what. 2-1 versus 2-1, first place on the line. Got to love this early matchup. That place is going to be rocking Sunday. Now, this is one of those games where you can really set yourself up here to head into a bye at 3-1. And just, Scott, there's so many years where we head into the bye with negative feelings. This can really be a difference maker if they can pull out this win this Sunday.
Oh, there's no doubt, Chad. And, you know, talk about not riding the roller coaster. But you do feel different if they're 3-1 going to the bye versus 2-2, right? You got San Francisco coming after the bye, and the Browns might be an underdog even at home because San Francisco's so good. So all of a sudden you're thinking, oh man, could they be 2-3, right? I don't want to get too far ahead, but you know what I'm saying? Like just the thought process versus 3-1, they'd be 2-1 inside the division, which is huge. We talked so much about these first three division games within the first 4 weeks, how important that would be. And I think anybody would have said 3-1, 2-1, you're 3-1 overall, 2-1 in the division would be a huge success. So yeah, there's a lot on the line heading with this game on Sunday, right? You had an extra week to think about it, think about the outcome after the game. So, yeah, it's a big one. The Ravens are going to, you know, I think the Ravens right now are favored to win the division. It was Cincinnati before the season, but they start 0-2. So I think the Ravens replace them as the favorite to win the division. We know the history of success that they've had. There's a bunch of storylines. You mentioned Jadeveon Clowney coming back, right? He's wearing number 24 now. Has a sack and a half already with Baltimore. Obviously did not leave on good terms. You got Lamar Jackson. You got Zay Flowers, the rookie receiver. Odell, does Odell play? He did not play last week against the Colts. I think it's an ankle injury. The Ravens have a bunch of injuries. It feels like you're catching them, if you're the Browns, you're catching them at the right time, depending on who comes back. But there's a lot of guys that aren't going to be back for them, even if some guys do come back. So big game. And again, 2-1 in the division, Chud. What a good start that would be when, you know, the Browns think they have a chance to finally win that division title.
Yeah, no question. Are you ready for prediction?
I am.
You get to go first this week. We both get the win last week. I moved to 3-0. You're 2-1. So what do you think? You up for going first here?
Yeah, I'll go first. We talked about this a little, as they say in your business, off air, Chug. It's so hard for me to predict blowouts in this league because they don't happen a lot. And I know, you know, we're coming off a week where Miami scored 70, right? The Chiefs won by 30. It can happen. The Browns win by 24, right? But it's so hard for me to predict blowouts. It's also hard for me to predict the team's only going to score 3 points because it doesn't happen, right? And I know the Browns defense is allowed only 3 points in 2 weeks, but I'm setting up what my score is going to be because it's just hard. I've watched enough games in this league where teams score points. They figure out a way. It's hard to keep teams down forever. It's hard to play suffocating defense week in and week out. Lamar Jackson scored 2 rushing touchdowns and ran for 101 yards against the Colts in a loss. Like, he's going to make plays. Zay Flowers is probably going to make plays. They got Mark Andrews, right? They still got I think they still have a solid defense over there in Baltimore. So I'm going to pick the Browns. I think the Browns are the better team right now. Now, this is assuming that Watson plays halfway decent, right, and doesn't get and it's not a lopsided matchup between Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. And I would think Watson would play reasonably well. I think the defense will continue to play well. This is a different test for them with Jackson's ability to run the ball, and that run game with him is an, you know, with him is such a key piece of it. It's hard to stop that run. It opens things up. How is Jim Schwartz going to handle it? Is he going to blitz like he has been? Is he going to attack, which leaves you a little vulnerable? You know, I know Myles Garrett has talked in the past about when he rushes Lamar, he kind of has to do it at not full speed because you don't want Lamar rushing inside you. Well, the Browns go full speed under Jim Schwartz. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how they handle that. Does he mix it up, or is it all attack, 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 blitz, blitz, play full speed, try to get the ball out of Lamar's hands? You know, orders, does he balance that with some blitzes, some dropping in coverage, just trying to confuse Lamar? I'm really interested to see how that chess match goes. But I think the Browns are better. I think, like I said, they're catching the Ravens not at full strength. It's a home game. The crowd's going to be amped up. You're heading into a bye, so there's nothing to leave in the tank, right? Let it all out. I got the Browns 24-20.
24. Wow. That's kind of a lot of points. It's more points than I'm putting up.
Right. That's why I needed that preamble, just because it's hard for me to say. It's just hard for me to say a defense is only going to give, like, say 10 points, right? You get 10, let's say you get 10 possessions in a game or eight.
Yeah.
They're only going to score on two of those possessions. Like, that's hard for, and I know what I've watched, right? I'm not denying that. It's just hard for me on a Tuesday to say, yeah, the Browns are going to play, any team really is going to play that kind of dominating a defense.
Well, right. But you probably would have never guessed they'd only give up 3 points to the Titans. They would
right at 16, right? I had the Titans scoring 16, right? So yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying you. I'm saying the Steelers scored because their defense scored. The Bengals didn't score on them. I mean, it's. I guess what I'm saying is when I went to make my prediction for this game, I had it a little bit more, kind of like you did, and then I started thinking. I'm like, well, gosh, I mean, can the Ravens score 3 touchdowns on the Browns? And it's not really a knock on the Browns as much as – or on the Ravens as it is this is how good their defense is playing right now. So, you're right. You make a lot of good points. It is the NFL, and things change, and that could easily happen. And what was your final again, 24-20?
Yeah, real quick, my buddy Zach Jackson tweeted out while we were talking the odds to win the North. And right now they're – Ravens are the favorite at once, plus 165. The Browns at 250. Bengals 350. Steelers 375. So right now, the oddsmakers think it's the Ravens. I'll tell you what: if the Browns win on Sunday, I would think that would flip, and the Browns would all of a sudden become the favorite.
Yeah, yeah, with a long way to go.
Sure.
I'm like I told you. After they lost to the Steelers, I thought that they had a really good shot to go 3-1. They're halfway there, and I think they're going to do it. I have them also beating the Ravens. I just, you know, I'm starting to feel like things are different. You know, I'm not ready to jump up and say, you know, they're going to win the division. They're going to, you know, do this, this, and this. It's a long season, but they've at least shown they're definitely a team to be reckoned with, especially defensively. So really, I think's exciting about these wins is that I think we always thought that we were only going to go as far as Deshaun Watson would take us, and while I do believe that is still ultimately the truth that with as far as you're going to get in the playoffs, that if the defense is as good as we think it is from what we've seen, you know, it makes you feel like you can win every week. And that's a good feeling to know.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Judd. And don't you think that it also, if your coach Kevin Stefanski and the play caller, you can handle things differently, right? If you don't think it's going to be a shootout every week, right? You don't have to put so much pressure on Deshaun Watson. You can punt if you need to punt because you feel like your defense is going to get you the ball right then.
Yeah, no question. I mean, this defense is a lot of fun. I'm going to go Browns 16, I'm kind of waffling between 13 or 14 because I think the spread's like 2.5.
It is. Yeah,
so it makes a big difference, you know, whether I think the Browns are going to cover or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, God, just look at the Ohio State Notre Dame game. I mean, what an incredible – these odds makers are incredible. That line ended up going to 3.5. And, wow. You know, Ohio State wins by a field goal, right?
Yeah,
it's incredible. I'll go with my first gut and go 16-14. But then, you know, that ultimately makes me feel like, you know, the Ravens scored two touchdowns. You throw 13 in there and, you know, it could be – I mean, there's other ways to get to 14, but you know what I'm saying. I mean,
I do. Yeah.
You could pick 16-15 and the Ravens, you know, Tucker throws in a, you know, a bunch of field goals. But ultimately, I guess the bottom line to my score, because we all know it's almost impossible. I think what do you call it again when you get it right on the money?
A noser.
A noser. And you got one last year.
I did, yeah.
And those are so hard to come by. It's almost impossible, right? So I think when we predict scores, we're kind of maybe going more with how we feel the game will go. And that's my score kind of reflects,
yeah.
You know, I think the Browns are going to win by a small amount. And I think a blowout either way would really surprise me. You know, if the Browns were to blow out the Ravens, that would be definitely making a statement. But I don't think the Ravens are going to come in. If the Ravens come in and blow out the Browns, that would just be, you know, oh, that'd be terrible to head into the bye. So I guess what I'm saying is low scoring game. I'm going Browns 16-14. They head into the bye 3-1.
Yeah, I could see that. I played around with a score like that. Yeah, I could certainly see that happening, right? Yeah, that's not far-fetched at all, Chud. So I like what you're thinking on that. I tend to go more points. How I tend to go is more points. 24-20, I bet if we went back and listened to all the pods, I bet 24-20 might be like my most picked score. Just because it's kind of easy to get there, right? You get three touchdowns, a field goal, two touchdowns, two field goals. Like, okay, that sounds about right.
Touchdowns, a missed extra point.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, you're right. And you could be right on the money with this score. It's very possible. No question. Listen, here's the bottom line. Let's just hope the Browns have more points no matter what the score is. So, hey, before we go.
Yeah, what do you got?
I got to ask you about the most talked about thing right now, not just in the NFL, but in pop and in the country. What do you think about Kelce and Taylor Swift?
Yeah, God bless them. I'm a big fan of Young Love, Chug. So hopefully it works out. I thought it was so cool that she was sitting, Taylor's sitting next to Mrs. Kelce,
mom.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the suite. I thought that was great. You know, I actually read a story. I forget where I read it. Just about how we shouldn't be speculating unless Taylor wants to speculate. It's up to her to control her narrative on her dating thing, blah, blah, blah. So I don't want to get too deep into it because I was like, okay, I never thought about that. But if it's for real and they're actually dating and she wants to date Travis Kelce, he seems like an hysterical guy to me. We know he's a good Northeast Ohio fella. Every reel I see with those Kelces, whatever their show is, that podcast that he and Jason have, oh my God, it cracks me up.
Do you listen to it?
You know what? I haven't gone back and listened. I just get all these reels, you know, when I go through Instagram, and I watch every reel, and I laugh so hard that I need to – I haven't been running, and running's the only time I listen to podcasts, so I get to get back to running. But, you know, I think it's cool. You know, maybe she'll be hanging out in Tremont one of these days. You never know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, we run a segment called Pop of the Morning on Go every morning on the show, and we've included that subject in like the last three or four because I'm into it. I don't get sucked into the pop stuff and all that too often, but I do have two daughters, so as I've gotten older and they get older, I it is something I pay attention to, but they're super into it right now. So that makes it fun, and just seeing her show up at the game, and I don't know, I just the fact that he's from Northeast Ohio, and I think he's a good dude. You know, yeah. You'd love to have him on your team. He's won Super Bowls, hosted Saturday Night Live. She's obviously the biggest thing going right now. So I just think it, you know, and the way it came about too, you know, how he wanted to go to a concert and wanted to meet her. And then next thing you know, she's at a Chiefs game. It's a funny story, no doubt.
Have you ever interviewed him?
I don't think I have. Okay. Have you?
I saw him at I don't know if it was a Greg Newsome or Jarvis. I think it was Jarvis Landry softball game a couple of years ago. And he was great, like so nice. You know, he saw Bernie was there, so he's hanging out with Bernie because there's that famous picture of him in the, you know, 19 jersey when he was a kid. It was 10 minutes, but he came across just like you'd expect him to come across. He was great.
Yeah.
And you got Adele saying she's a Browns fan, right? Because she's with Rich Paul from Cleveland. Right. So right. All kinds of big singers. Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, people know where it's at right here in the land, right?
What do you guys call it? Pop of the morning?
Pop of the morning.
Okay. We just stole Pop of the morning for a minute.
We did. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you and I are necessarily experts on Pop of the Morning, but we'll do our best.
I know I am not. So yeah. Cool. Thank you, Chud. You got everything? We're good?
We're good.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy.
If I could just get my fantasy team to rise above the ground and not act like they're dead.
And I'm with you. Mine has been a good start. My picking has been just average through 3 weeks, so see if we can turn that around. Long season left. Okay, we got bye week next week, so we'll hook up at some point during the bye to recap this Ravens game. Maybe we'll do it early in the week so we can get to talk about the Ravens, because it's going to be a big one, like we talked about, Chud. So looking forward to it. Another divisional game. Thank you so much, Chud, for listening. Everybody can catch him at Go, the WKYC Morning News, every morning. And this has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.